I'm Bill Martins with Kate Archer Kent, and this is our year-end membership drive. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount. And because the single largest source of our funding is listeners, your gift is so important for the WPR programs you enjoy.
So giving to WPR is easy. All we need is your name, your contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay.
It takes just a few minutes to make your gift to Wisconsin Public Radio, and your support right now really makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
17 is the number to keep in mind this hour. We're looking for 17 pledges to keep on track with our hourly goals. These hourly goals so important. This year-end membership drive, it is the last drive of our centennial year. Your gift today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It ensures a bright future for the programs you rely on.
And this pledge drive, you can do two good things at once. Choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month, and you'll provide meals for those in need in your area. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And now is a great time to become a sustaining member. It's easy to set up. It's convenient, ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. Get started right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Leon from Pewaukee says, I have been a WPR fan for years. I appreciate the far-ranging topics and the great skill of your program hosts during the interviews. And Kate, you do a great job leading these discussions here. And it's not an easy thing to do when we're switching gears from topic to topic to topic. We do lots of different things on this morning show. And Kate does a great job.
It's a delicate dance.
Yes, exactly. And it's not an easy job. It's, you know, it's a lot of twisting and turning. And she leads those discussions. And we all learn something in the end. So thank you very much, Leon, for that comment and for your pledge. And you can do that as well at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR is listener supported. That means your gift is powerful. It makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks. The House passed a bill on guns this week known as concealed carry reciprocity. This sweeping expansion of the right to carry concealed firearms virtually anywhere in the country has been a top legislative priority for the National Rifle Association. Harry Wilson is a political science professor and director of the Institute for Policy and Opinion Research at Roanoke College. He's author of several books on gun politics, including Gun Politics in America, Historical and Modern Documents in Context. Harry, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be with you this morning.
Well, explain the nuts and bolts of concealed carry reciprocity. What does this bill do?
Well, essentially what this bill does is it allows people who have a concealed carry permit from a particular state to have that permit recognized in other states that also have concealed carry permits, even if those states may have more serious restrictions in terms of how one has to get the permit originally. So, for example, I was looking this morning and noted that Wisconsin, kind of like my state of Virginia, already has reciprocity with a very large number of states where your permits from Wisconsin would be recognized in Minnesota, Michigan, etc., but your permits would not be recognized, for example, in New York. With this law, your permit would be recognized now in New York, so you'd be able to carry concealed in New York State. Whereas if you tried to do that today, you would be in violation of New York state law and you could be prosecuted for this.
So this really streamlines concealed carry across the country.
It largely, to a large extent, it would do that, yeah. It really sort of makes things somewhat more uniform. The origin of this is, and this throws many people initially, this is an NRA, clearly an NRA-supported bill, but the origin of this is that there were a few people who sort of mistakenly got caught up in either I didn't realize when I went into another state that I was in violation of the state law, or because they're accustomed to carrying concealed in their home state, they made a mistake of crossing into another state and then were in violation of this. There's a sort of now an infamous story of a woman from Pennsylvania who was prosecuted in New Jersey.
Yeah. Well, it feels like in America today there are a lot of people who are keeping score. Is this a win for the NRA?
It is. I think there's no question that it is, although this bill faces, at best, an uncertain future in the U.S. Senate. It seems, frankly, unlikely to pass in the Senate. But this is something that the NRA has been supportive of and been pushing for a couple of years. So in the short run, it's a small victory. If they were able to get it passed in the Senate, I would say it would be a much larger victory for them.
Well, let's examine what's folded into the batter of this bill. One thing is that it would close loopholes in the National Criminal Instant Background Check System, or NCIS. Isn't that something that gun control advocates have been lobbying hard for?
Indeed, and that's a very important component of this, and this is one reason why in the House of Representatives, this bill actually was supported by some Democrats who normally would be opposed to it completely, but in the House, the Republicans folded these two bills together. One of these is really an outgrowth of the recent shooting where certain records should have been reported and were not reported by the military, and trying to force the federal government and other governments as well to report all mental health records to the National Instant Criminal Check System that would prohibit some people then from purchasing who should be prohibited from purchasing and or getting the concealed carry permit, but now are not because those records are not in the system. And we've seen that happen on more than one occasion, tragically. And this bill would also do that. In the Senate, these bills are separate, which means the bill to strengthen the background check system will pass easily because this is really not opposed by supporters of gun rights. This is more pushed by the other side, but it certainly is not opposed. I don't know really of anyone that opposes this, because this is simply requiring people to report records that should, in fact, under current law, be reported. It's not really expanding it any. It's just sort of making people report what's not being reported now.
House leaders scheduled their gun rights vote on the same day as a vigil at the Capitol to remember victims of gun violence. Is that just a coincidence, or is that audacious?
That's a really good question, and I don't know the answer to that. I mean, obviously, Congress has been busy with some other things in the past couple of weeks as well. So I don't know if this just sort of fit in the calendar or if it was done for that reason. I doubt that members of Congress would do that intentionally. It would not surprise me if supporters of one side or the other did something like that intentionally. But I don't know that members of Congress would do that. That's just sort of in some ways potentially antagonizing the other side, which generally in politics, you don't want to do.
Rhode Island Democrat Jim Langevin told Rolling Stone that he's concerned about permit shopping. If someone can't get a concealed carry permit in his state of Rhode Island, they could go to a nearby state and get a concealed carry permit there, and then it works to undermine the laws in Rhode Island. Will this bill encourage what he calls permit shopping?
I don't think so, no. It may be possible. I will confess that I'm not intimately familiar with the concealed carry laws of every individual state. They do vary from state to state. One of the things, for example, when I was doing my research on Wisconsin, thank you for having me do some research on Wisconsin for this interview, is that you have to be, to get a Wisconsin concealed carry permit, you must be a resident of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And when you move from Wisconsin, that you have to, you then are required to essentially surrender that permit. So I cannot speak for every other state, but certainly in terms of Wisconsin, no one's going to be shopping in Wisconsin for a concealed carry permit because you simply can't get one unless you can demonstrate that you're a Wisconsin resident. I think that is true of the vast majority of other states, but honestly, I don't know. I can't say for certain with each individual state because the laws do vary.
Let's bring in a call now. Dwayne joins us from Hayward. Hello, Dwayne.
Hey, good morning. I'm a 33-year law enforcement veteran, and as it stands now under H.R. 218, which was passed, I don't know, a decade or so ago, all law enforcement officers and qualified retired law enforcement officers can carry in all 50 states regardless of the state laws. Has it been shown in many studies that concealed carry permit holders are less likely to commit crimes than any other segment of the population? We should pass this law, and these people should be able to exercise their rights. Permit holders are way more looked at than driver's license holders, and driver's licenses are permitted in every law. Marriage licenses are recognized and has to be recognized in every state, and they don't even come under a constitutional amendment that allows it.
Well, let's get Harry to weigh in here on what Dwayne is saying. Harry, go ahead.
Yeah, the caller is absolutely correct that concealed carry permit holders are more law-abiding than average citizens. That's not to say that concealed carry permit holders never commit crimes. It's not to say that they never commit crimes with firearms. They do, but they do so at a rate lower than the general population. That's not really surprising because what I believe is a universal requirement, again, it could be a couple states that are exceptions, but I believe a universal requirement is that in order to get a concealed carry permit, you have to pass a background check. That's true, and I know that's true in Wisconsin. It's also true here in my home state of Virginia, where in order to get a concealed carry permit, you have to pass a background check, and then those permits are generally valid for 5 years. You have to renew the permit, and to renew the permit, you once again have to pass a background check. Now, it's not to say something can't go awry in the 5 years in between. Obviously, that can always happen. But these folks are screened, even in states like Wisconsin and like Virginia, which are what we call shall-issue states, meaning if I ask for a permit and I pass those basic requirements, then the state is obligated to give me a permit. Other states are may issue, which means in some cases you have to get permission from your local law enforcement officer. Someone has to vouch for your character, whatever that means, and then they get to decide whether you have one or not. One of the pushes for the past decade or more has been to loosen those laws and to make more states shall issue states, meaning if you meet the basic requirements, then you have to get the permit. And again, the caller is absolutely correct. The people with concealed carry permits are generally more abiding. They're less likely to commit crimes than average citizens.
Dwayne, thanks for the call. Let's bring in Karen from Eau Claire with a quick question. Hi, Karen.
Good morning. My question is, so if I have a carry and conceal, like in Wisconsin, and I'm traveling like to another state that doesn't have carry and conceal, can I still carry and just not conceal it, like put it on the floor of my front seat or something like that, or, you know, if I'm out and about, wear it on the outside of my clothes or something?
The answer to that, to the best of my knowledge, is it really depends on the state that you're traveling to, and everyone who's traveling out of state with any firearm needs to be very, very careful about that, and you need to research the laws of the states that you're traveling to and also the laws of the states that you're traveling through, because you could easily, for example, you could have a firearm with you that's legal in Wisconsin, but if you even drive into California, that type of firearm may be illegal in California. So you're not protected in that case. If that's the case, you are in violation of California state law because you're in possession of a firearm that's prohibited in California. So anytime you're traveling, doing interstate travel, with a firearm, you need to be very careful about what it is that you're carrying, how you're carrying it, and everyone needs to do research on that, or you can really find yourself in trouble without, in your mind, doing anything wrong, and certainly with no intent of doing anything illegal. But as is almost always the case, it's not an excuse for disobeying the law.
Karen, thanks so much for that question. It is the first major firearms-related bill Congress has voted on since the massacres in Las Vegas and Texas earlier this year.
On this vote, the yeas are 231, the nays are 198. The bill is passed without objection. The motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
The concealed carry reciprocity bill passed mostly along party lines. We're talking about it with political scientist Harry Wilson of Roanoke College. His most recent book is Gun Politics in America. You can join in with your thoughts on this legislation. Questions for Harry, 800-642-1234. We'll be back shortly. Reciprocity has been a major goal of the National Rifle Association, which has been promoting the expansion of permissive concealed carry laws for decades. A bill supporting reciprocity passed the House this week. We're exploring that legislation this hour. But first, it's to check in now to see on how our year-end membership drive is doing. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with my colleague Bill Martins. Our year-end membership drive is a time for you to think about how much you've learned from and enjoyed WPR programs in 2017 and think about how you want to keep them going strong in 2018 and then take action with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we are looking for 16 pledges by 8 o'clock. You can make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every day. Your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Makes a difference.
The Ideas Network is always with you all day long, whether you ride to work with us, run errands with us, or cook dinner with us, as I do. You get interesting discussions whenever you want them. We're always here, and you make that possible with your donation. The Ideas Network wouldn't be what it is without your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
During this year-end membership drive, we have a special thank you gift. Ask for one of the food bank gifts. There are options available at $10 or $20 a month.
Your thank you gift will provide meals to a Wisconsin food bank near you. Get started with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
December is a special time of year. We asked a few people, what are your year-end traditions?
One of my favorite December traditions is making Christmas cookies with my mom.
Our family tradition in December is the whole family goes bowling. And it's a weird tradition because none of us really bowl.
Well, every year, my friends and I like to indulge in one really cheesy Christmas Lifetime movie.
Make giving to Wisconsin Public Radio one of your year-end traditions. In return, you'll get programs that make you think, laugh, and start conversations all year long. Here's how.
WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Good morning, I'm Bill Martins with Kate Archer-Kent. We are raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs you enjoy on the air. Whether your pledge is $10 a month or $100 a month, we appreciate and count on your gift.
Maybe you're saying to yourself, I'll support the morning show tomorrow. Well, today is Friday, so it is your last chance to pledge your support for the morning show during this membership drive.
I love Fridays. Don't delay. Join this great community of people coming together right now to make great radio. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
15 more pledges to go this hour. Let's keep on track. 2017 marking 100 years of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 gives us a strong start not only to 2018 but also to the next 100 years.
It's the season of giving. Support the radio you love and do something extra. Choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your your pledge right now. So important, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks. The NRA's head of legislative action told CNN this week, this vote marks a watershed moment for Second Amendment rights. The National Rifle Association has called the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act its highest legislative priority. It passed the House Wednesday along a mostly party line vote. We're talking about this legislation and what it means with Harry Wilson. He's a political science professor at Roanoke College, and his most recent book is on gun politics in America. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of concealed carry reciprocity? How do you want the Senate to act on this bill? Join in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Amy from La Crosse called. She wonders whether states could put concealed carry information on the driver's license. She says it could clear up confusion if it's in the same place on every license card.
That's an interesting idea. I don't know that I've heard that one before. Although what's probably going to happen, or what could happen in that case, first thing that comes to mind for me is that the terms of those when they expire will be different. I don't know how long driver's licenses are valid in Wisconsin. Here in Virginia, they're actually valid for 10 years. Other places I've lived, not nearly that long. But what that means is if I got my permit here in Virginia, I'd either have to get a new driver's license, and no one that I know wants to go stand in line at DMV to get a new driver's license unless they absolutely have to. So I think it might be the logistics of that might be difficult to do. Although her point on that is really well taken, I think.
Well, this bill did pass mostly on party line vote, but six Democrats voted in favor of this bill. Usually bills are like these are strictly along party lines. What do we know about the Democratic votes in favor of this bill?
Honestly, I don't know. My assumption is going to be that those are Democrats from Republican-leaning states or Democrats from rural areas. I know in the Senate, there are some Democrats that might cross over and vote for this bill. Joe Manchin of West Virginia might do so. Heidi Heitkamp, South Dakota, might do so. So there are a few Democrats in the Senate that might cross over and vote for something like this. So occasionally you see something like that, in the same way that occasionally you see Republicans vote against it. And there were some Republicans, I believe, in the House that voted against this bill. And those are going to be Republicans who represent much more urbanized areas and much more liberal areas.
Let's bring Anne in from Poinette. Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, first off, we have guns. We need them for shooting coyotes and other predators on our property. But I have a problem here. They totally bypass states' rights. And also, what about the right of people? I would never get a concealed carry because I don't want to be out in public amongst other idiots who think that they're cowboys. And this is going to ruin New York Times for New Year's for me because we're going to be too afraid to be able to go. My son, who was in the military and that served in Iraq, then served in England, is moving back to England because he wants to get away from the cowboy.
So I think what Anne is saying is this is overriding what states are trying to do in their own state regarding gun legislation.
To some extent, she's correct, and particularly the example of New York. So they say, most states with concealed carry permits do have reciprocity agreements with lots of other states. As I said earlier, I know Wisconsin does. I know my home state here, Virginia, does. New York does not. Massachusetts would not. Illinois would not. States with stricter gun laws essentially would not. But I guess, my question for the caller would be, is the implication then that a significant number of the concealed carry permit holders in Wisconsin or Virginia or Florida or wherever are, from her terminology, cowboys? Are these people going to be intent, A, to go to New York Times or the Times Square on New Year's Eve? For your listeners, I've actually been there once. It's not worth your time. And if you want to get trans.
Editorializing there, Harry. Move on.
Sorry. My apologies. It was a harrowing experience at the end. But I don't really see anything like that happening. Anything can happen, of course. But that could happen with a resident of New York who doesn't have a concealed carry permit but decides they want to carry into Times Square anyway. I mean, anything is possible. And she is correct that it does, that it does to some extent there preempt the laws of other states, but we do that with laws all the time. I'm not saying that that's right or that's wrong, but we do that we frequently do that with laws. One example that some people have given a couple times have been driver's licenses. States, again, have different requirements for driver's licenses. States have different requirements for getting your vehicle inspected, but I can legally drive my vehicle in any state, even if that state has greater restrictions on when vehicles must be inspected. So we already sort of in some ways preempt these laws in a variety of other ways. This would in fact be another one.
Well, Anne, thank you so much for calling in. Harry, the concealed carry bill allows people to bring their weapons on national park lands and allows police officers who are off duty to bring guns into highly restrictive school zones. What do we know about the other, perhaps more nuanced changes in this bill?
Well, we've been discussing concealed carry in national parks for some time.
Uh-huh.
So that one is a part of this, but that's in a sense nothing really new. And law enforcement nationwide, and in most states, and retired law enforcement, as one of your earlier callers mentioned, have always enjoyed greater freedoms with regard to carrying firearms. And the obvious thought there is that they've already been vetted numerous times and people have felt they were safe to carry firearms in a wide variety of areas, including, in some cases, governmental buildings, including school grounds. So the sense there is that we're not going to make these people go through some of the requirements that other people do. They automatically, in many states, have a right to carry concealed without a concealed carry permit. We've given them more rights in general, thinking that these people have clearly demonstrated that they can be trusted with firearms. Once again, let me say, there are always exceptions to any rule. So somewhere along the line, someone's going to do something that they shouldn't. That is inevitable among any group of people and with regard to any sort of policy that we're talking about.
Harry, do you think this vote in the House is fodder for the stump speeches and commercials that we'll see in the 2018 midterms?
Sure, absolutely, yes. this bill, assuming that it's not going to pass the Senate, is more or less I would argue it's more or less a show bill. And if we assume that it really doesn't have a chance to pass the Senate and if it's been separated from strengthening the background check system, it's not going to get 60 votes in the Senate, which is what it would have to get to pass the filibuster.
We're talking with political scientist Harry Wilson about the concealed carry reciprocity bill that passed the House this week, and we'll get back to that conversation in just a moment. But we are now going to be heading into a little bit of a pitch break here to find out how we're doing on our year-end membership drive. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Bill Martins. Our year-end membership drive is listener-supported. That is the essence of how Wisconsin Public Radio works. Your support is vital to all the programs on WPR. That's why we're here to ask for your gift right now as 2017 comes to an end. We look forward to starting 2018 strong. Make the programs you rely on possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we've been talking about the politics of guns this hour, specifically the House bill that that was passed earlier this week that would allow for concealed carry across state lines. It's always a controversial issue, and we hear from callers on both sides. You know, this hour is an example of the important, informative, substantial conversations we have on the morning show.
Now take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 11 pledges in the next 20 minutes, and this pledge drive is a great time to support the station you love.
And thank you so much if you've already given. If you haven't yet, help pay for the programs you enjoy by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
During this year-end membership drive, join the 9XM Leadership Circle with your gift of $100 or $200 a month for the programming that's essential to your life.
You'll make a difference in your own life and enhance the quality of life for so many others throughout the state. Make that leadership gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
My name's Meg Marshall, and I'm from Weyerhaeuser, Wisconsin.
I think today, especially with this crazy world we live in, it's more important than ever that people know what's going on in the world. This is not just about the United States, it's about the entire world. And the only place you find coverage of international issues to the depth that you find them on Wisconsin Public Radio is right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Meg from Weyerhaeuser, Wisconsin. Join me as a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio.
And you can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Good morning. Bill Martin's here with Kate Archer-Kent. Listener support is the single biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. And that's why your support during this year-end membership drive is so important. Maybe your gift is $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
As we look ahead to 2018, we're so grateful that Wisconsin Public Radio has such strong listener support. It's one gift at a time. Listeners provide our single largest source of funding. And if you haven't given yet this year, now is the time. And if you have given this year, we appreciate your extra year-end gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
All right, 10 more pledges to go by 8 o'clock. This year-end membership drive is the last pledge drive of our centennial year. Your gift today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 ensures a bright future for the programs you rely on.
Now is a great time to become a sustaining member. It's easy to set up. It's convenient. Ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card. Get started at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Kara from Madison says, with stories that range from the informative to the uplifting, WPR helps me maintain the balance that I need to make good choices during these unprecedented times. So thank you for that comment, Kara, and thank you for the pledge. And you can do the same at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you very much.
The concealed carry bill allows people to bring their weapons on national parklands, allows police officers who are off duty to bring guns into school zones, that's been discussed before. Supporters, though, of the concealed carry reciprocity bill argue that the Second Amendment doesn't end at a state's border. We're talking about that legislation this hour with Harry Wilson. He's a political science professor, director of the Institute for Policy and Opinion Research at Roanoke College. He's written several books on gun politics. Getting your thoughts on this bill as well at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. So, Harry, you are under the notion that this bill will not get much traction in the Senate or will be come in a different form. What do you see ahead in the Senate for this legislation?
That's a very good question. And I think right now the consensus seems to be, or the Senate hasn't even scheduled this for a vote. And certainly the most important issues on the docket for the remainder of this month, the remainder of this year, for Congress is some sort of a spending bill to prevent a government shutdown, or maybe two of those between now and early in the new year. And obviously the Senate and the House trying to reconcile the other important piece of legislation, the tax reform. So there's an awful lot on the plate of senators already. It seems unlikely that this is going to come up for a vote between now and any time by the end of the year. So this is something that may simply, Mitch McConnell may decide simply not to bring this up for a vote at all. Again, with the understanding that he's going to have to get the 60 votes, and he's probably not going to get those. He might get a handful. He's going to get most Republicans on board. Might get a handful of Democrats, but not likely to get to 60. We get a majority, but to beat the filibuster, it's going to take 60 votes, and I don't think it's likely to get 60.
Are there other legislative priorities in the Senate?
Well, certainly, as I said, although not every senator is working on it, but reconciliation on the tax reform, and Congress has to come up with some sort of a spending or stopgap. We already have a stopgap spending measure to prevent a government shutdown, and they've got to come up with some budget solutions. And that, needless to say, I don't need to tell your listeners that those are both very difficult, tricky issues. So there's a lot on their plate between now and the end of the year. And, of course, like the rest of us, members of Congress also want to get out of town for the holidays. So they have, in some ways, more pressing business than taking care of this, and particularly if it's a piece of legislation that, A, will wait, and, B, isn't likely to pass anyway. It's quite possible that the Republican leadership in the Senate simply decides we don't want to crowd the docket with this, that there's sort of no point in bringing this up and debating this and having this issue sort of crowd out other things that we need to deal with in a more timely fashion.
Were you surprised at all that this bill passed the House so easily? And were you seeing this coming? Was this on your radar?
I'm not surprised that it passed that easily. I mean, certainly because it was still with this very strong Republican majority and bringing over some Democrats, and because it was paired with the strengthening the background check system, I wasn't really surprised to see that. To be perfectly honest, I was not aware that it was coming up. It wasn't something I was tracking, so I wasn't aware that it was coming up for a vote in the House. But this is also one of these bills for members who are under some pressure from gun rights groups. This is a way of them saying, we're actually trying to do something for you.
Oh, kind of satisfying the interests of constituents.
That happens sometimes. Actually, that does happen sometimes. So, yeah, it can happen to satisfy the interests of constituents and or interest groups, or both. Sometimes those coincide, that we'll bring this up for a vote. It's not uncommon for that to happen, and even if they understand that it's unlikely to pass in the other chamber. And if we recall, and I do not remember the number of times off the top of my head, but how many times did the House of Representatives vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act when Barack Obama was president, knowing that it was never going to be taken up in the Senate, or it certainly had no chance of passing the Senate? But it's a way of demonstrating these are our priorities. This is what we would like to do.
Does concealed carry reciprocity pose a whole lot more concern for some states than others?
Certainly, if you are in one of those states that has very restrictive laws, yes. And someone could make the argument, again, they'd like to go to New York or California because they have very restrictive laws, then someone from Wisconsin, for example, or Virginia, would enjoy greater benefits in your home state than you do, because you may not be able to get a concealed carry permit, not being able to demonstrate a quote-unquote a need for one. Whereas if you live in Wisconsin or you live in Virginia, all you have to do is pass the basic requirements and the state has to issue you a permit. So you could be actually at a disadvantage if you live in those states, because you wouldn't enjoy the benefits even in your own state of someone who is visiting from another state. Having said that, if you live in New York or California, you've probably reconciled yourself to the fact that your rights with regard to firearms are significantly less than people living in those other states already. You may not be happy about that, and I know there are many people living in those states who are not happy about that, but they've just sort of, I think you have to accept that this is where we live, and you know, these are the laws of our state, and we don't enjoy the freedoms in some cases that people have in other states. And again, this is true of issues not just related to firearms.
Harry, is there gun legislation and or gun lobbying that you are tracking, that you are watching for, that could be coming down the pipeline?
Nothing at this point that stands any chance of being passed, I think. Gun control, gun issues as a whole, I think we're at a point in the country where we are with many other issues, and this will come as a shock to no one, that we really are sort of deadlocked, that people's positions are pretty firmly set, that people generally do not change their mind on this issue. We always see, after a mass shooting, we see an uptick in support for stricter gun laws in public opinion polls, but that goes back down to sort of where it generally stays within a couple months. That we're really at a stalemate on this, and certainly at the national level we're on a stalemate, that nothing of any significance is really going to pass the Congress and be signed by the president in either direction right now, because you're not going to get greater freedoms for gun rights passed the Senate, and there's no way you're going to get more restrictive laws passed by the House of Representatives. That could change in 2018, but that's sort of where we are right now. So I think really, you know, at a national level, and this has been the case for some period of time, we're not likely to see any significant legislation in either direction because, you know, the country as a whole is so polarized on this issue.
We're coming up on the anniversary of the Sandy Hook shooting. We know there have been families who have now made it their life mission to work to get more gun control in America. Are these grassroots efforts working or not?
I think for the in some cases, yes, and they have been successful in getting more restrictive laws in some states. Again, some of those states that generally have what we saw after Sandy Hook was states went in two different directions. States that already had relatively lenient laws, in many cases, made them even more lenient. States that had more restrictive laws made them more restrictive. So Connecticut, for example, made laws even more restrictive after Sandy Hook than they were before. And Connecticut laws are some of the most strict gun laws in the country to begin with. So we did see states move in those directions, and generally we see more movement at the state level than we do at the national level, because states, in many cases, there is more of a consensus in one direction or another within the state.
Well, Harry, thank you so much for being with us.
Sure.
Harry Wilson is a political science professor and director of the Institute for Policy and Opinion Research at Roanoke College. He's the author of several books on gun politics, including Gun Politics in America, Historical and Modern Documents in Context. This hour, the morning show was produced by Nyasia Ellison and Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. And now let's check in on our year-end membership drive. I'm Kate Archer Kent with Bill Martins here in the studio. This is our year-end membership drive here on Wisconsin Public Radio. You count on the Ideas Network for in-depth talk about the issues, and we count on you to keep these discussions going strong. Your gift right now makes a big difference, both this year and as we head into 2018, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we hope you've enjoyed that conversation about guns and the proposal to allow concealed carry across state lines. We heard from callers with some strong feelings, and that's what we like. And, you know, this is an example of the interesting, important, informative conversations that we have here on The Morning Show.
Now take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're closing in on our hourly goal. Let's do it. We need 9 more pledges in these next 4 minutes and change here. Your gift right now is so important. Support the programs you rely on each and every day.
And thank you if you've already given. If you haven't, the time is right now. Give at WPR.org or 888 888- 202-252.
Hey, you might have a monthly subscription for your cell phone and Netflix, and now we're asking you to support WPR like you pay for other services you rely on.
The difference here is that you decide how to give. Support the programs that are a part of your day. Become a WPR sustainer. Choose a monthly gift amount that works for you, and then set up an ongoing installments at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Public radio has enriched my life in so many ways. When I was a new mother back in the 1990s, and I became hooked on Wisconsin Public Radio. I've been an avid listener, and each day of my life is enriched because of the depth of the topics offered, the balanced dialogue that the hosts and the guests both offer. The Ideas Network makes me a better mother and a better citizen, and I'm so thankful for it.
And we're thankful for you, and you can make that pledge of support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Bill Martins with Kate Archer-Kent. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, is the right amount. And because the single largest source of our funding is listeners, your gift is so important for the WPR programs you enjoy.
New members are important to Wisconsin Public Radio. A huge thank you to all the first-time donors who have pledged so far this hour.
Oh, yeah. And if you've never given before, know that your new membership keeps Wisconsin Public Radio the strong, reliable station that you depend on. You decide the amount. For example, let's say $10 or $20 a month, and then give WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here's the breakdown for this hour. We need 9 more pledges to come in. And by the way, for the 8 pledges that have come in, 4 of those, half of those, have been new members. So thank you so much for your support, for being a new member. Your gift right now, so important, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Gives us a strong start, not only to 2018, but also to the next 100 years.
And there's this. It's the season of giving. Support the radio you love and do something extra. Choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll make a difference for WPR and for those facing hunger in your area.
And if you're a sustaining member, thank you so much. Make today the day you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support.